4.2 million Americans have now been canceled by their insurance companies.
Canceled your show.
And Futurama's been canceled.
Canceled.
Canceled too soon.
Is officially canceled.
We canceled twice.
His launch pre-order bundle was canceled. Do we know it's a his?
Have been effectively canceled.
And abruptly canceled.
From Target is canceled.
Or unceremoniously canceled.
The plan was being canceled.
The cabal has been canceled.
Look at the role of the Rothschild family.
Money and power.
Monsanto and a few other chemical companies.
Culling the population through eugenics is their answer.
The World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and the World Trade Organization.
These are the most disgusting people on the face of this earth.
Or they control the information.
The powerful few people who run this planet.
They're not as powerful as you think.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now brings you Cancel the Cabal with Stephen Roberts.
Red or blue?
And welcome, everyone. It's Friday evening. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this is People's Internet Radio's Cancel the Cabal. Welcome, everyone, in Ireland, Scotland, UK, Spain, Australia, and elsewhere in the EU. I have on, for the second time, a very special guest. She's a doctor of psychology, Dr. Suzanne Still. Welcome back to the show, Suzanne. She's also an author of two books and a third one coming out.
Thank you, Stephen. It's nice to be back.
Yes. I had a very good time the first time, so me and our friend decided to bring you back for a second time.
Wonderful. Well, let's shake it up.
Yeah, let's shake it up. We talked about your first book, and that was, remind me of the title again, please?
My first book is called Commune of Women.
That's right, Commune of Women, and it, it mainly dealt with South America, didn't it? And
No, you're thinking of the second book, which is Fiesta of Smoke.
Okay,
Commune of Women is the story of a group of women, six women, who are trapped in a small room for 4 days together. And in order to pass the time, they begin telling their life stories. And the life stories start out very kind of lighthearted and funny. And as the days pass and as the danger to their lives increases, the stories go deeper and deeper into the real core issues of their lives.
Oh, yes. That's right. That's right. Tonight we were going to talk about your second book, weren't we?
Yes, and the second book is called Fiesta of Smoke, and it is set mostly in Mexico, partly in Paris, and it deals with a couple. The man's name is Javier, and he has been he's a university professor in Mexico, and he has been a political organizer for many years from his student time onward, and really trying to create social change in Mexico. And as the book progresses, it becomes obvious that political solutions aren't going to work, and that arming the people becomes a priority, mainly because there are armed militias who are disrupting the indigenous people, militias that are armed by big land owners who are trying to take over the land of the indigenous peoples.
That sounds interesting.
Well, it grew out of an interest that I have in how social and political change actually happens. We're seeing it even in our own country now, when the political structure is corrupted in various ways. How do the people make their voices heard? And certainly that's been an issue in Mexico for many years. That it led to the revolution of 1910. And it's looking like it's going to take another one, a second revolution, to set things straight now.
Well, you and I briefly talked about this during the time I was waiting to get the stream. I guess we can talk about, the power structures and the people behind them. It's apparent to a lot of people that, it's apparent to a lot of people that actually pay attention, read, and listen and discern for themselves that the power structure is just what it's called, a power structure. And they don't really like to let any kind of control or power get away from them, do they?
No, and certainly, money talks, and even in, a country like our own, where we hope that the democratic process is in place, we know that, big money and lobbyists are basically, purchasing the votes of our elected officials. And this is nothing new. This has been going on for a very long time, and in Mexico it certainly has been. The United States has interfered in Mexican politics for many, many years. And there is a tremendous wealth in Mexico in resources. There's oil, obviously, and in southern Mexico, the big hardwood forests, where timber interests are lurking. There are minerals, mining interests have always been there since the Spaniards, since the conquest. One of the things they came for were precious metals. So poor Mexico has been. Sort of raped, I guess is what you'd say, for centuries.
Well, it seems to me it's not just Mexico, but it's apparent that most any religious country, deeply religious country, because I do know for a fact that the most of South America has a deep religion, and it's Catholic mainly. And the power structure doesn't seem to like that. They seem to go after all of Christianity, but the Catholics more so than most.
Well, there's an interesting situation in Mexico and Central and South America, and that is that they had their own very high civilizations before the conquest. And those civilizations were destroyed by the Spaniards, and the Catholic religion was basically imposed upon the people. And one of the points that I make in Fiesta of Smoke, my second book, is that if you scratch the surface, of course I'm speaking of Mexican society, and I can't really speak for South America, and I haven't traveled there, and I haven't done a lot of study, but I do know that in Mexican society, if you scratch the surface of that Catholicism, what you find beneath it is the mysticism of the indigenous religions. And the two are kind of melded together or superimposed one on top of the other, I suppose is more like it. One of the real symbols of that for me is a place called Cholula, where there is an Aztec pyramid. Am I saying that right? Aztec or Inca? No. Anyway, an old pyramid that had, over the centuries, been covered with dirt. And up on top of it is a Catholic cathedral. So it's like a little mountain rising up with a pathway wrapping around it, and you go up to the Catholic cathedral on top. But underneath it is the underpinning of it is this, you know, pyramid from antiquity. And that, I think, is the philosophical kind of underpinning of what goes on in Mexico, at least, if not in the rest of Central and South America.
Yeah. Are they, is that meant to insinuate that the so-called Illuminati are have been in control down in there also?
You know, I don't know enough about the Illuminati to say, you know, where their influence has extended or how far back in history it goes. I do know that the power structure in Europe in the 1500s and 1600s certainly, destroyed existing cultures that were in many ways more sophisticated than their own, and then dominated the people, decimated the people, both with European diseases and also like smallpox, and also through murdering them, and also through working them to death in the mines and in building cities and the culture that became a Europeanized culture in those countries. So we can say that the power structure has dominated that area for a long time, for 500 or 600 years.
Oh, well, certainly. Yeah, we love talking about the crown here at People's Internet Radio, Susan. So,
about crown?
About the crown, yes. Yes, the British crown. I thought maybe you were alluding to that.
Well, it was the Spanish crown in the case of the conquest.
Right.
The Spaniards, and later the Portuguese. The Portuguese, of course, took over Brazil, mostly the Spanish culture was what was imposed on South and Central America. And the Catholic religion, the Jesuits came and re-educated the people, the ones that were left.
Yeah.
And the people were basically enslaved. They were not allowed to wear the same clothing as the European people. They were made to wear simple white cotton drawstring pants and tunics, basically. And that was the sign of the peasant, you know, population. And then they were basically enslaved to work on the big ranchos of the Spaniards. And the church did some kind of legislation that was meant to at least look like the people were, they had the interest of the people at heart. But really, it was, there's one system called encomienda, and another called repartimiento. Both of them were meant to at least nominally say that the church was helping the people, but basically they always ended up enslaved, if not literally, then to the company store, where they were sold the goods that they produced at an exorbitant rate, so that they were always in debt,
right,
to the great landholders.
Ironic.
So, the power structure has not favored the people for a very long time.
Well, it never has. I would venture to say that it never has, Suzanne.
Well, you know, there may have been some golden age that we don't know about, but yeah, as far as we know, it's not looked good for a long time, has it?
Well, the conspiracy is that there is a certain number of families that can trace their lineage back well past Egyptian times, and
yes.
these families still band together and still keep the power structure going and the illusion going.
Yeah, well, it's not so much an illusion. I mean, it's a reality, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Of the absolute power. It's interesting, you know, my grandmother was from Scotland. She was a Ross. And she told me that my ever so many great grandmother was the first cousin and first lady in waiting to marry Queen of Scots, and that they had traced their lineage back to King David. Well, of course, in those days, you know, I mean, you could do anything with genealogies, and it. So who knows if that was true?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it fascinates me that it is even possible to imagine doing such a thing, tracing your family history back that far. And yet we're told that there are these great families that can do exactly that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that have been consolidating power for a very long time.
Certainly. The old saying, keep it in the family, really, I guess, rings true with these people, because they tend to marry their third, fourth, and fifth cousins.
Right. They must be getting a bit inbred by now, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. Well, yes, and there comes the psychology part of the entire scheme, the psychopathy.
Yes. I really do, in trying to look very objectively, you know, as a depth psychologist, to look objectively at the way things are running from the top down. And I see that we really are in the hands of sociopaths.
Yes, we are.
They lack compassion.
Yeah.
And seem to be capable of any extraordinary acts of
empathy.
Of violence, or you know, with no compunction whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a little statement from one of the chat rooms there. Susanna says, "Every U.S. president, bar none, has been related to the monarchy."
Is that true?
I believe so. Yes. Yep. I believe so.
To the British monarchy, you say?
Yes.
Uh huh.
Well, that's what everyone here takes the crown as a British monarchy.
Okay. Is Britain?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but there is a lot of evidence, and there is a lot of proof out there that might tend to lead to the conclusion that the British never really lost the war. They just changed things around and
switched the game up a bit.
But they're still in control over here in America and Australia, Canada, Africa. Elsewhere.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Last time I was on, we and Greg was on with us. We talked a bit about Zyklon B and the Bush family.
Right, right.
And just this morning, I came across a review of a book by David Dorado Romo, and his book is called "Ringside Seat to a Revolution: An Underground Cultural History of El Paso and Juarez, 1893 to 1923, which is a pretty esoteric topic, you know. But if you've been keeping track of what's been going on between El Paso and Juarez, which are just across the Rio Grande River from one another, Juarez is now the most violent city on the planet because there are daily, assassinations because of the drug cartels there.
Yeah.
But what was interesting to me about this book, it deals with this period of time just before and after the turn of the 20th century. And they're talking about, the author is talking about the immigration problem then. And there was a mayor in El Paso who ran on the platform that the immigrants coming in from Mexico were diseased, and that they should be cleansed before they were allowed into the country. And of course, this is what's being said right now about the children who are flooding in from South and Central America and Mexico and are being held on the border. And what fascinated me was that they then began, they passed a law, and they began to make every immigrant who came across the river be bathed, some of them in harsh chemicals and pesticides. They poured gasoline on them. Some of them, as a result, caught on fire and were burned. And, but one of the things that they used to cleanse the immigrants was Zyklon B. Clear back then.
Explain to somebody who might not know what that is, what that does, what it is.
Zyklon B is a deadly gas, and it was used by the Nazis in World War II in the death camps to kill the Jews and gypsies and others. And there is a claim. I have not substantiated this myself, but I take it from people that whose knowledge I trust. The Zyklon B is a chemical that was manufactured by the Bush family.
Well, they weren't actually the Bush family back then, though, were they? Wasn't it the Walkers and the somebody else?
I don't know. I thought it was the grandfather.
Oh, you mean Prescott Bush.
Prescott. I thought so. But like I say, this is not my particular expertise. But I did find it fascinating that far back in the history of, you know, the border disputes, that particular chemical was already in use. You know, never miss an opportunity, you know, to promote your product.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it happens to be a deadly gas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, certainly. Greg just gave me a text and said that he was ready. So,
terrific.
Want to bring him in? I will go ahead and bring him in then. How far back? Zyklon B. That's what. Yeah, that's what you just mentioned. That Hitler supposedly used in the death chambers.
Yes. Yes, it is, and probably Greg can tell us a lot more about its genesis than I can.
Sorry about that, everyone.
He comes with a fanfare.
Yes, he does.
Okay. Hey, Steve.
Hello. Hi, Greg.
Yeah. Are we on the air?
Hello.
Yes, we are, and I've got Suzanne.
Oh, and Suzanne, too. Oh,
hello
okay,
there.
Excellent. Oh, okay. Yeah, I was up doing depositions all day in Ukiah, you know, for the ongoing lawsuits, the perpetual lawsuits. So, and I'm now sitting next to Clear Lake in Lakeport. So, you're talking to you guys. So, are we on the air yet?
Yes, we are.
We are on the air, and we were just discussing Zyklon B. Let me tell you what I was just telling Steve, that I was reading a review of a book that is about the area of El Paso and Juarez right at the turn of the 20th century. And there was a law saying that all immigrants had to be fumigated, basically, before they could cross into the United States. And one of the chemicals they were using was Zyklon B.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were wondering how the Bush family worked into that. And I said, we'll have to ask Greg, because I know that you know that particular lineage.
Oh, okay.
Suzanne?
Well,
hang on a second first,
yeah.
Greg. Suzanne, can
okay, you bet.
Can
yes?
you next time you get back on, can you just go ahead and speak up into your microphone as best you
have
can?
Have you lost me?
No, it's just that Greg's about, I don't know, 8 times more
powerful.
More powerful than what you are.
Volumetric. I'm volumetric.
Is, okay. Is that what it is?
I'm soft spoken and Greg is not.
Yeah, you know, Suzanne remembers that term from we were in pre-med together, and when you talk about, you know, meters and volumes and metrics and so forth, you know, that was from Dr. Draper's chemistry class.
That's
so
right.
I think that's right. Right. Roy Draper. Okay.
Roy Draper. So God bless him wherever
right.
he is.
And so I hope he's listening to our show today. All right. You could say I knew him when. All right.
So.
So anyway, you Cyclone B. Okay. Now, that's a real interesting situation with Cyclone B. It's right. The way I understand it, there's about five generations to Cyclone B, and it started, with a fundraising effort by Prescott Bush where he went out, and there's a group called, in Germany, it's called IG Farben, F-A-R-B-E-N, okay, or AKA, to those of us in the trade, Iggy Farben, okay? Well, IG Farben, I'm sure most of the people in Europe know who IG Farben is, and I'm sure there's a lot of people either cringing or getting a pucker factor that would snap a 10-penny nail when I say that name in connection with Cyclone B, because this is the way I understand how it works, is the Bush family, as in Prescott Bush, actually paid for the patenting process, it started out ostensibly to be an insecticide.
No. And that's how it was being used, apparently, on the border.
Right, exactly. It's kind of like a DDT dusting. Okay.
Yes.
And so what they said was, okay, we could use this ostensibly to, first of all, wipe people out. Okay. And we can always say that we're going to de-louse them. Okay. Put them in the showers and we can de-louse them. Okay. With Cyclone B. Okay. And it was carried in little canisters and transported around Germany in these little gray trucks. Nondescript trucks. And those were the actual killing teams. Everybody thinks that everything was done in those concentration camps by just full-time professionals.
Yeah.
No, there was actually professionals that drove around, killing teams that drove around, and they carried canisters of Cyclone B with them.
So what year would that have been, Greg?
What, Steve?
I said, so what year would that have been?
Oh, okay. Well, that would have started... back in the good old, late 30s, early 40s, 39, and of course that would have been, not just Germany, or Eastern Germany, but that would have been into Poland also. And I believe there were some concentration camps in Czechoslovakia. Okay, probably Hungary too. Ostensibly, all the countries that were tentatively aligned in supporting the Germans. So needless to say, they drove around their little trucks and provided the killing means, for these concentration camps. And the irony of all of this is that the Germans, being Germans, very businesslike, they turned right around and said, Mr. Prescott Bush has done such a wonderful thing for us. Let's go ahead and we will pay the Bush family royalties. And that is the first real money that the Bush family earned. Is by wiping out, millions of Jews, in concentration camps by using Cyclone B. And of course, everybody was upset. Everybody in the U.S. knew it. Most of our intelligence circles knew it. But the problem was there was something called business, profitability. And as a result, there was some loose Confederate talk about bringing Prescott Bush up on criminal war crimes charges because of this. And they just, it reached a peak in about 43, 44 and about bringing charges against this Prescott Bush.
He was actually arrested by J. Edgar Hoover, and through manipulations of the powers that be, he was let off with virtually no, you know, nothing for funding the funding Hitler and the Nazis right. in the early
right. You got it right.
Early 40s.
You bet.
He had a New York
right.
bank.
When American boys were dying, you know, in Europe, you're fighting the Germans, and there was Prescott Bush busy selling them, you know, the weapons of mass destruction. Okay.
Yep.
It was a weapon of mass destruction by anybody's means. Seven million Jews can't be wrong. All right, on that issue, and that's why in Europe, and I was in Europe when George Bush was nominated to become president.
Senior.
George W.
W. Junior.
And there was a real shockwave that went through Europe. It was like, how on earth could the Americans be so stupid as to nominate somebody like George W. Bush, whose family has a history of war crimes, to be president? Okay, they were just flabbergasted. Europe was just flabbergasted.
There's a thing called nationalism, and there's also these things called media that uses manipulations on a daily basis to help people forget about the past.
What I have found, especially Americans, is their attention span is about as long as a house flies.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, tell me what happened last week. Most people can't, tell me what happened last week.
Right.
I know because I get called up all the time asking my opinion about what's going on. But most people, they live their lives in America. And it's a very stable environment, and they don't pay any attention. Unless it's affecting them directly, they don't pay any attention. And the robber barons, and that's what they are. Everybody from the Cheneys to the Bushes, to the Mellons to the DuPonts. I mean, they're robber barons. The Goulds, all those folks, they understand, that the value of media, they understand the value of education, and that they know how to manipulate both. All right. They understand the value of networking. And so when Prescott Bush got into trouble, you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, so much problem, so much ruckus was raised by his blatant, war profiteering that they turned right around and sort of arrested him. Sort of.
Well, and Suzanne was going to go into the story of Cyclone B, weren't you, Suzanne?
Oh, no, not really. I just was saying that it has this connection to my research on Mexico.
Oh, okay.
And what's going on in Mexico. That goes so far back. It really surprised me to find that out.
Oh, yeah.
And it was used as a fumigant.
Well, that's the same kind of rhetoric that they use today on people of different cultures and stuff there, that these people are vermin and they're going to bring in disease and this, that.
Exactly. It's exactly the same rhetoric that's being used against the children who are being held now on the border, that they are diseased, they're infecting the border patrol. There was a report on one of the right-wing radio shows that 4 out of 5 border patrol have been infected with I forget which virus, but it turns out that the actual report said 4 or 5. That's how propaganda works.
Well, they just changed a couple letters.
Pump it up a little bit and then say it in an excited voice and people will believe it.
Well, they just changed a couple of letters. That's what it was.
That's right. Yeah, it's just a slip of the tongue.
But I just turned 50, Suzanne, and I remember back in the mid-70s, they would come to our schools and show us the reel-to-reel little documentaries or something on the marijuana.
Demon weed?
Yeah, the weed. They would always say that it was a gateway drug, and people were jumping off of buildings because they think they could fly, They're just doing the same kind of things today. They're just running off of a playbook, and they don't really know how to change up their plays.
Didn't they call that reefer madness?
Reefer madness or demon weed?
Yeah,
you know, reefer madness. You know, when you take one puff and your eyes dilate and you know they bulge out of your head and you walk around like you're in a George Romero movie.
Yeah,
you know, Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, reefer madness. Okay,
I do too.
And by the way, you know, when we talk about, you know, fumigation and body lice and body louse and all this kind of stuff, that was the justification for DDT. You remember, at Ellis Island, they would pat everybody down, make them take showers and pat them down with DDT to get rid of all the, you know, the head lice and so forth. So, there's a thin veneer of medical coverage, you know, and the utilization of something like Cyclone B. And by the way, like I say, the IG Farben folks actually paid royalties. Only the Germans could be this thorough when it comes to business practices. And they paid the Bush family immense royalties. And then they also paid the Bush family. And the Bush family, they're probably, you know, rolling over in, what is it, not Hyannis Port, but where is it, Kenny Bunkport?
Kenny Bunkport,
yeah.
Where they
have, yeah, their summer hangout, their summer digs, okay, is something like this, they were paid in non-negotiable bearer bonds for Rhineland-Westphalia, okay, and they were paid, each bearer bond was $250,000, and it was to be paid, and here's the irony is I've actually seen these and held these bonds in my hand, and they were printed up in San Jose, California, on the same cotton cloth material that our money is printed on, and they were stamped right on them that these bearer bonds would accrue at 5% per year, you know, no matter what, including wartime. All right, including wartime. So in other words, 5% automatically was accrued per bearer bond on $250,000 bearer bonds, and that would be a tremendous revenue to be paid no matter what, and especially if the Rhineland-Westphalia, which is the largest electrical utility group in the world, if Germany went to war, and even if the power dams on the Ruhr, in the Ruhr River Valley, were bombed and knock out part of the power for Rhineland-Westphalia, they would still pay the 5%, you know, bearer bond interest. Okay, so that was a big source of payment to the Bush family. Okay, and that's how they got so grotesquely wealthy. All right, they got tremendously wealthy, and when it comes, you know, I have to laugh because when it comes to projects that, you know, the village idiot George W. Bush, you know, took part in, you know where he was gonna, you know, start an oil company up. Arbusto, and
yeah.
The Harkin Energy. Okay, well, he, what they did was they allowed all their chums, like Bin Laden, the Bin Laden family. That was the biggest investor in Harkin Energy, was the Bin Laden. Okay. And they put it out to all their friends that they could invest in all these energy companies. You know, in spite of the fact that the Bush family were one of the wealthiest families on the globe, all right? Unbelievable wealth and power, okay? But that's why they would put those nonsense companies together that usually failed, by the way, but you know, as all good robber barons know, that if you have a dog business like that takes a powder, you can write off the taxes on it, okay? You know, what I didn't realize is that if a company is involved in an SEC investigation, and they are found to be doing bad things, or like a banking company, a bank like Bacci, Bank of Credit and Commerce International, like the Bushes have. Okay, that if they get caught and they get fines levied against them, you know, like the American banks just did last week with the European banks, the banks, American banks, can write those fines off against their money's earned. So if they earn money, criminal money, they can turn right around and get a fine and then write that off.
Well, certainly.
Okay, against, yeah.
Yeah, well, you didn't actually think that, you don't actually think that a bank is going to pay anything, do you? Whether it be a fine or not.
No. Right. Oh, yeah, no. It's sleight of hand. No. You know, that's what the little people are told. Okay?
Right. Powerful people don't pay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're fined $9 billion for having all these foreign accounts.
Yeah.
Like American accounts. You know?
Well,
right.
Yeah, look at what, I think it was a Wells Fargo down in South America a few years back. They were caught laundering, I think it was $378 billion, and they got a $100 million fine. You know, that's just about like robbing a bank.
And they wrote it up. Right, and they wrote it off against their profits.
Well, certainly,
on that drug money.
But that's right. That's kind of like robbing a bank of $20 million and flipping the cop a couple of quarters on the way out.
Yeah,
actually,
you're flipping him a fiver on the way out.
Yeah,
you know, you're absolutely right, Steve. That's what's going on. It hasn't slowed down. Okay, not at all. All right, you know, and I have to laugh like. What was it? Just yesterday, I saw where the House Speaker, the Republican House Speaker, is going to sue the president now for over Obamacare.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
Well,
okay.
Why would he do that? He's the one to help get it passed.
That's what I mean. You know, I mean, the whole thing is just basically out of control. You know, the only way to bring this back into control. And I think Susan would agree with me on this, is don't fine these people. God, don't take them in for a hearing, or a senatorial hearing. Oh, gosh, that's going to hurt their feelings, okay? No, don't do anything like that. No, here's what you're going to do. Yeah, here's how you straighten all that mess out, is you send these people to prison, all right? Send them to prison, okay? Yeah, you know, I just got through, as I think I mentioned to you, just got through, deposing that dirtbag that's in my mobile home. I have a mobile home on a piece of property in Fort Bragg, California. And the dirtbag he's on Megan's list, okay?
Right.
As a pedophile, all right? He's on Megan's list as a pedophile. Well, he happens to be one of these, embarrassing family relatives of a senator somewhere here in the state of California. And surprise, guess who paid his legal fees to get out of this? You know, he was caught red-handed, by the way, with child pornography. I mean, infant-type pornography. And he had his fees paid, okay, by this senator. And then the case that he's fighting against me is being paid by the senator.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a drug dealing child pornographer, okay, who is fighting a case against me because he could win. He very well could win.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the courts of Fort Bragg are anybody's guess, but guess what? You know, when he was caught red-handed being a child pornographer, he didn't get any time. He got a 1-year suspended sentence and probation. Okay. All right. I just found that out just an hour ago.
Yeah.
Right before your show, Steve.
Yeah.
He got, and that's what he got. He has to report into his probation officer once a month, and let his probation officer know that he's not, being a pornographer with little children, 3 and 4 year old children.
Yeah,
okay?
But Greg.
And make him do bad things. Okay.
Say, Greg.
Now, yes.
Suzanne's going to leave in about 10 minutes here.
Oh, okay. All right.
We wanted to get into her book a little bit.
Did we answer Suzanne's questions about yes. Cyclone V? And, oh,
yes,
good,
she did
good,
very
okay.
Very thoroughly, thank you. I brought that part up about the fumigation of people clear back at the turn of the 20th century because, of course, it's happening now with the children who are flooding across the border. Just yesterday, I had a discussion with someone who said, what kind of a mother sends their children unaccompanied across the border? It's just disgusting to me. And I said, I'll tell you what kind of a mother
a desperate,
it is.
A desperate
it's a
one.
Desperate
yeah.
mother. A very yeah. desperate mother. And there's just not an understanding of the atmosphere that people are living in that would cause such a crushing decision as that. I mean, it's like Sophie's Choice, you know?
Yeah.
You send your child and know the dangers that they're about to encounter, including death, or do you keep them with you and face death, you know, that way? And Fiesta of Smoke really deals with the kinds of dangers that the indigenous people are encountering in their homelands and sort of, you know, the backstory of how these kids end up where they are.
Well, it used to be quite a few years ago that Mexico was one of the holiday places to go. If an American or someone else had some money, they could just about live like a king down there. And
people still do, but
yeah.
they are in colonies. And as long as you stick to some of the more mainstream places, like San Miguel de Allende, some of the other.
Zihuatanejo.
What's that? Zihuatanejo, yeah. Zihuatanejo. You know, be fairly unmolested, but when you travel in the interior, as I have been doing for several decades now, you're crossing drug highways. You run into, therefore, army outposts out in the middle of the desert where your car is stopped and every inch of it is checked. And it's wild out in the places where American tourists don't generally go. And
go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying both of my books, Fiesta of Smoke and the one that's going to come out in January of next year, which is called Well in Time, which is a sequel to Fiesta of Smoke, deal with the kinds of violence that that indigenous people are encountering in Mexico.
Well, people here in America think that we have it bad. And in some places, some areas, we do have it bad. Other places don't have it bad, but nearly all throughout Central America, it is just a hell.
It is a hell, not only because there's poverty for various reasons that, you know, the empowered people can answer to it, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, but also because there is an active campaign to harass and to murder the indigenous people.
Well, certainly it is. I've said this before on different shows, but being a drug dealer can be very, very glamorous. It's very understandable how children get into it.
It's more than the glamour. They are, at this point, they are basically impressed the way, you know, seamen used to be. If you don't sell drugs for me, I will kill your family.
Yeah, yeah. But,
and so, you know, the threats and the actuality of that are really influencing a lot of young people.
Yeah.
They don't have much choice. And therefore, you know, desperate parents send their children here in the hope that there will be some sanity in their lives.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I can certainly understand to a 15 or a 16-year-old kid
might still be in school and might be on the fence or straddling the fence of whether he wants to quit school and be a drug dealer or finish out his school and get a $8.50 an hour job.
If that, well,
if
that,
that
would be big money.
Yeah.
In Mexico.
And they see a neighborhood kid their same age, maybe one that can't even drive yet, that's 15 years old, and he has this $100,000 car and two or three girls, and he's sitting in the back seat.
He's got his boots and his big white hat.
Yeah.
And his silver belt buckle, you bet.
Yeah. And he's sitting in the back seat.
And he's slick.
Yeah.
And silver-plated six-shooters, too. That's what I always had a fantasy about. So, with pearl handles, of course.
Well, now, let's see if we can make that come true for you one of these days, Greg.
Now, one of the things that I would like to say before you have to go, Susan, is something like this is you probably remember when I was down on the border, and I was working with our National Guard down on the border, and we had to construct fences. Okay, well, they call them fences. That's the PC term. They're actually walls. Okay.
The wall.
And yeah. Right, it is a wall. Okay. And but a wall sounds much more dramatic than a fence. Okay. And of course, it was a real adventure for me because everybody talks about Mexico. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mexico this, Mexico that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like everybody assumes they've been to Mexico if they go to Tijuana, okay, and pick up a ceramic burro, and so forth. So I was down there, and we actually started the wall from 40 yards out in the Pacific Ocean, and we had to wait low tide, of course, and then put it in. And then it runs the entire length across the, San Diego, and then Otay Mesa, Tecate, and then it stretches out, finally gets out of the canyonland, the bad canyonland area there. And it goes right to Arizona, and it stops at the Arizona border. And so you can imagine what kind of superhuman effort that took. It took virtually, an entire brigade of engineers, 2,000 people, working, 5 days a week, 12 hours a day. It took them 4 years to do that project.
And meanwhile, you were burning up bulldozers trying to move mountains to do that wall, the Mexicans were busy burrowing under it. And there are hundreds of tunnels that run right under the wall. I mean, historically, walls have never worked. They never will.
Well, what my first point was going to be was that I thought there was a border there. Okay. There is no, until we put one there, there has never been a border with California and Mexico. I mean, driving in.
No, the Rio Grande represents part of some sort of a border, but no, they're contiguous lands. There's nothing that would divide them.
Yeah. Well, forget San Ysidro. That's the big border crossing. No, there is nothing. There is nothing for a border, okay, nothing. And so when we were laying out the roadway that would service the wall, we were going up and down some of the most ferocious, rough, turbulent landscape I have ever encountered. There were boulders the size of houses, the size of your house, Susan, but there would be boulders stacked hundreds of feet high. And we had to put the wall across that stuff. And so driving out there, one of the things I didn't understand really about the border issue and what is going on now is that we'd be driving along and I'd be sitting in the passenger seat or the driver's side and we'd go down these little narrow cuts in the road, towards like a stream bed and there would be like a cottonwood branch hanging out over the roadway. And I look up and like one time there was a mother and five children on the branch just as we were, we actually had to push the branch up to get underneath it. But after I saw that poor mother with her five children and they looked like quail, little quail, and they were but they had this look of just absolute desperation and panic in their eyes. And I realized, you know, how I could never be a Border Patrol agent, because that's what you deal with. That is what you see, you know, from a few inches away. That's the kind of desperation you see when you're down on the border. And when you see children trying to get across on inner tubes or filling up their shirts, you know, full of air, like doing an air sac in their shirts so they could push across. Do you know what it takes to send those children back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
If they're that desperate and their parents are that desperate to get them here, you know, and so talking about it is always one thing. Actually seeing it is another. All right.
Yes, it is.
And that's what we have here. That's what we have on our hands, is a very desperate situation.
Yes, it is.
You know, now,
Greg, yes. I'm going to go ahead and take a break here so we can say goodbye to Suzanne here.
Suzanne. Oh, great. Okay.
Yes, it's been wonderful to be on again, and I hope that we can continue our discussion some other time.
Yes, I hope we can, too. I'm
looking forward to it.
Thank you. And thank you to your listeners. A pleasure to be with you today.
I'm going to have to ask Greg to give you my email, because I want to send links to you to both of these shows, Suzanne, if that would be okay.
Oh, terrific. Please do. Please do. Yeah.
Yes, I will.
Greg has all that information, so.
Okay. And I bid you a good night.
Good night to you. To you both. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Susan. Good night.
Bye now.
And I'm going to go ahead and take a break here because I need one, Greg.
Okay. All right. Did you want me to stay on, Steve?
You know, you can if you would like. You can if you would like.
Okay. All right. But I've got a 2-hour drive in front of me.
So, okay.
Yeah. I actually stopped. I'm in a park, like I say, in Lakeport, California.
Right. Okay. So, well, I just need a quick 3-minute break here.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, well, put on AC/DC or something.
AC/DC or something. Okay, I got one.
Of course,
one
I
here.
Have to be careful out in California. That takes on a whole new meaning.
Yeah, but, it does, doesn't it? All right, here we go. I've got a good one for you. All right, everyone. We'll be right back here in just a few minutes. All right, and welcome back, everyone. Me and Greg are continuing on. Do you have some things to talk about, what you were doing before we pulled you onto the show, or are you going to go somewhere else?
Well, I've got about 15 minutes, Steve, because like you say, I'm facing a 2-hour drive. We're facing a 2-hour drive back to Sacramento, okay, from Clear Lake, California.
Right.
So for all your listeners who know where Clear Lake is. So I was going to ask, what's coming in on the chat room? Is anybody saying anything on the chat room?
Most of the things were about Cyclone B, and somebody wanted to know what the actual name of it was, and just a bunch of Cyclone B stuff so far. We haven't really, there's an Agenda 21 comment there. And
Well, it's a bit of a personal issue with me, because when you say Cyclone B, of course, all your listeners have heard about my discovery of VX, okay, VX gas.
Right.
And VX is like it for a long time, it was the top shelf evolution product of Cyclone B. And, you know, there's like 4 or 5 generations of Cyclone B, and then there's VX. And then, of course, what I uncovered there, thanks to IG Farben, that's where it was actually produced. That's what produced the chemical constituent in what was uncovered there in Iraq, but by IG Farben. But it was the, VX/GF, okay, which is the creme de la creme of weapons of mass destruction, chemical weapons. All right. And and of course, who was involved? I'm sure 100% of your listeners know who was involved behind those weapons of mass destruction that I uncovered. All right. Who was involved in their production? The Bush family.
Bush family, yeah.
Gee, imagine that. The Bush family was involved in the assembling restructuring the shipment and the actual business arrangement.
Yeah.
With Saddam Hussein for those weapons.
Do you know what they're called down in South America, Greg?
Say that again, Steve, about South America?
Do you know what they are called down in South America?
Who, the Bush family?
Yeah, they're called the Junta.
The Junta.
The Junta.
Let me see. Junta means, what does it mean? It means like a group, right? A big governmental group.
Uh huh.
Usually, yeah. You know, if I remember right, in Central America, where I've operated extensively, they refer to a junta, as first of all, it's usually the ruling body of the country. It's usually taken over through a coup.
Right.
Okay. And they have what are called brass hats running the outfit.
Right.
I mean, yeah. And not one of these brass hats are known for their kinder, gentler methods of dealing with their fellow human beings. None of them. All right. I mean, Noriega, by the way, remember Manuel Noriega?
Yep.
He was like, you know, he and his group of thugs in Panama. And by the way, you know, when I say Noriega, when I was down there, I kind of forgot his name because everybody referred to him as a Pina Cabeza. Okay.
Yeah.
And at first I thought that meant, you know, I thought it meant pineapple face.
No, but it's pea brain.
It means penis face, actually. So,
well, cabeza is
according to the Panamanian. Okay.
A cabeza is head.
Penis face or penis head, you know.
Dickhead, maybe.
All you have to do is pull up a picture of him and see why they call him that.
Okay. Dickhead, maybe, but that's it.
Yeah, something like that. Right, exactly.
Because cabeza
but also
is...
the El Salvador death squads, you know, those are all run by a junta. Guatemala, another junta. All right. So Honduras, another junta. And of course, if you look very carefully, you'll see U.S. stamped on most of these juntas. So yes, I am familiar with juntas. Now the Bush family, they changed the name from the junta to the neocons.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I think it's safe to say. All right. So, but that's my experience with Cyclon B. Okay. And like I said, one of the top people that Americans I was dealing with, IG Farben, was Prescott Bush. And that's what he was doing. He was actually producing Cyclon B and being paid royalties for it the whole time. So, you know, as they say, a kinder, gentler nation under the Bushes. So, you know.
I got a question for you, Greg.
Who am I to contest that?
Yeah.
You know?
I got a question from the chat room for you.
Oh, great. Hey, I love questions from the chat room. You know, especially on a Friday like this.
Sure. Does Prussian blue mean anything to you? Prussian, or Prussian.
Prussian blue, okay. Yeah. Sure, Prussian blue. In chemistry, okay, first of all, chemistry, it was used in biochemistry. Prussian blue was used to dye certain types of gram-positive organisms. But it's actually a compound, and you can use it for various other, like spectral graph studies and so forth.
Uh-huh.
But Prussian blue, now I heard somebody say it was some sort of chemical, you know, constituent in a weapon or something like that, but that's what I know of it, you know, for medicine is Prussian blue.
Yeah, the listener goes on to say that it renders gas masks ineffective. Supposedly.
Oh, well, I guess I better get, well, of course, now that I'm retired from the military and that business, I don't have to worry about it, I don't think. Now there was something that they used, you know, because whenever you get training in gas, you know, in gas weapons, they put you into a shed, okay, they call it a chemical shed. and they pop all different types of chemicals, and you check your mask to see if it has a good fit. And up until the last time I went to Iraq, I was not able to have a mask fit properly. So I found out the hard way, you know, in those chemical sheds, boy, if it doesn't fit, you know, I mean, you better stop everything right then and there, and don't just let yourself be processed through, because that's a very serious issue. You know, I mean, if you get into a place like with VX/GF, okay, and you don't have a mask that fit properly, okay, your life expectancy, if it fits properly, is about 10 minutes in a VX/GF environment. But if it doesn't fit properly, your life expectancy is trimmed down to about maybe 15 to 20 seconds. All right. So they were using something that smelled like bananas to test our gas mask. All right. And, you know, test the hood and the gas mask. And what they call mop gear. Okay. So anyway, I don't know if that's something comparable or if this Prussian blue is a weapon or just a testing composite, but I have heard the name. So I don't know who produces it. Can you find out from the caller who produces it? What country?
Possibly. Yeah. I guess I'll probably be looking that up here, or unless they know already. But I'll pass that along if it does come in.
Okay, well.
Before I interrupted you with that question, you were about to say something right there. Or?
Oh, okay. Well, just, you know, there's, like I say, Prussian blue, and there's several other different types of chemical compounds, you know, used, you know, to dye biological materials. So, and Nile blue and so forth, you know, and copper green and all that. That's where all those, you know, those terms come from. But anyway, I'd love to hear more about it, you know, from the, person who called in. And, because, like I say, I mean, this stuff changes, and even though we're supposed to have an embargo on these horrific weapons, we don't appear to have one, all right? New stuff keeps turning up all the time. New forms of landmines, new forms of anti-armor weapons, new chemical weapons. So, it's hard for a person to stay up on them. And I should stay up on them because I get asked about the Middle East situation and what's going on in Israel and Gaza right now. So.
Right. Yeah.
You know, now they have used chemical weapons. I don't care what anybody says in Gaza.
Okay. Certainly they have, yeah.
So, and that is the top of the headlines, all right, is this whole issue about, you know, the three murdered kids, Israeli kids, and then what's going on, you know, with Gaza, okay? So I just hope it doesn't, because they said this thing is escalating into a full-scale war. And last time Israel was in Gaza, they used chemicals.
Yeah. What's actually going on is the terrorist group Hamas was actually created by Israel and funded and started
right.
by Israel.
Correct. Right.
So mm-hmm. Actually, what's going on is they're just attacking themselves to keep the illusion alive.
Well, where does that sound familiar?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Something about Al Qaeda.
Problem.
Didn't we start Al Qaeda and do the same thing?
Johnny on the spot, Hamas, right?
Well, one thing is for sure is that it justifies those big military budgets that Israel is in love with, and so are we.
And
okay?
it also justifies that, what is it, like $3.5 to $4 billion we send to Israel every year, too?
Oh, yes. I just saw something called Iron Shield, okay? And, you know, that is the anti-missile system, you know, that covers Israel against things like, you know, like these big rockets that they're firing. They almost look like Scud missiles. You know, they're about that size and they act like it, you know. But that's who paid for all that. Oh, right. And what I can't figure out is where does all that political clout come from, you know, to get systems that don't even cover the United States, that don't even protect the United States against incoming, you know, ICBMs. But boy, they have them in Israel, don't they?
Yes, you know, they do.
Something's really wrong here. Okay, if we've got the House Speaker, was it John Boehner? Or is that his name, John Boehner?
That's the way it's actually pronounced, but he claims it's he claims it's Boehner, but
it's a
German.
Okay, all right,
it's a Germanic name.
You know, for a while there, everybody was talking about this guy, Anthony Weiner, John Boehner.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, I guess, all subtle Freudian suggestions aside about politicians, and alpha male sex, but to have this joker who's now filing a lawsuit on the part of the Republican Party for Obamacare. Now, yeah, I'm less than thrilled with Obamacare like everybody, like any other medical type, because, I mean, hey, what good does it do when you have a problem, to turn over the problem to the very people that caused the problem in the first place? That doesn't make too much sense, and never did for me. But it makes a whole lot less sense to have somebody with very clear, selfish, and greedy motivations, like the Republicans in this thing, who are the largest recipient of AMA lobbying funds, to be suing, bringing a lawsuit and litigation against the President of the United States. I think that speaks of some sort of, what's the word, catch-22 insanity?
Yeah.
I might be wrong, but that sounds like insanity. Okay. Did the American people, were they asked about that? Gee, is that a good idea for Republican Party to be suing the Democratic Party?
Yeah.
Okay, and the president? I don't think so.
But Greg.
So you, yes.
Albert Einstein did say one time that the definition of insanity was doing something over and over and expecting a different result.
You're absolutely correct, Steve. And the other thing he said is, and I still stick with this, is one of my favorite quotes, is that there's only two forms of infinity known. One is space, and the other one is man's capacity for stupidity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Right. You bet. Okay. So, needless to say, when I see all this, when I see this stuff going on, I'm thinking, okay, all right. We need another party. Okay. We need another party. And what did I suggest a couple of days ago, Steve, on your show? The Bull Moose Party.
Bull Moose Party, yeah.
The Bull Moose Party.
With
okay.
Colonel Anthony Schaefer.
Hey, even the name even sounds like it means business, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Bull Moose. Okay. All right. And I already float the name of a potential presidential candidate representing the Bull Moose Party?
Colonel Anthony Schaefer.
That's right. Anthony Schaefer.
Does he have a full bird on his shoulder there, or is it just a?
Actually, no. It's a light bird. It's a light bird. Colonel.
Is it okay?
Remember, he's the guy who tried to warn everybody that 9/11 was going to happen.
Right.
And when 9/11 did happen, all the neocons pounced on him and his group, Able Danger, and they destroyed all their notes, all their information within 48 hours.
Oh yeah.
Of 9/11, right? Okay. Hey, he's obviously used to commanding, he's obviously used to government, and he's obviously not in the car, so to speak.
Yeah.
He's not in the car in terms of political favors owing to anybody, all right? So, hey, the Bull Moose Party wants to nominate, Anthony Schaefer, Colonel Schaefer, for the job of President of the United States, okay? Now, I think we need to get that out there the best way I can think of, Steve, is on your show.
Yeah.
Okay. And, Anthony Schaefer, everybody can check on him. Sure. Hey, Fox News, reporter, and announcer. Hey, he obviously knows what he's doing. So, hey, I think Anthony Schaefer can save America. All right. From this lunacy of the Republican Party suing the Democratic Party and the president. Okay.
Yeah, but you know, Greg,
for a medical program. Okay.
I kind of like all of us taking our own personal power back and saving ourselves and telling the feds to go shove off. That's what I kind of like myself.
I said the best way to do that is throw a rope over a tree branch and hang a lawyer. Okay. All right. Hey, you know, I concur with some of Chairman Mao's thought processes on how to utilize and organize people.
Right.
You know, and you would say, okay, you know, if we have an insect problem, everybody go out and kill one grasshopper a day. Okay. Like a locust plague. Okay. Hey, and no more locust problem. Okay. Well, hey, just think how long it would take if everybody went out and grabbed, you know, when the first tasseled, sleazy, pinstriped, you know, hustling, vicious lawyer threw a rope over a tree, you know, okay, and dealt with them properly, okay? You know, you say they reached the end of their rope, okay? And how long do you think that would be before this country would settle down and all this nonsense would happen? That was the first thing that John Boehner said, was that he was out shopping now for, you know, and used taxpayer dollars to sue, okay, to sue the president. He was looking for a good law firm that would do it, all right? I mean, have things gotten ridiculous with these lawyers, you know, and like in my case, you know, you go in, you take it into court. I mean, very clearly in my case, my two cases, I was wrong. There's no question I was wrong. And I don't know the outcome of what it's going to be in court. And that's because of all these manipulative, lying, thieving, greedy, self-centered lawyers. Okay. Self-centered lawyers. Oh, I just got the word, Steve.
Yeah.
Okay, that a band's going to fire up here. I'm sitting in the park looking at a Clear Lake, which is the largest lake in California.
Yeah.
And it used to, well, Lake Tahoe is larger, but it's part of it's in Nevada. Okay. So Clear Lake is the largest lake in California.
Okay.
And they're going to fire up with an in the park kind of music. So I've got to get rolling, buddy. So anyway, hey, TGIF to all your listeners. Okay. And let's keep those chat rooms. Okay.
You're welcome.
All right. Well.
Okay.
It sounds like you're going to have fun out there.
Well. Yeah. Well. Thanks so much for having me on your show. I greatly appreciate it.
Okay. Have a good night.
As always, and remember, bull moose. Okay.
The bull moose
party. Okay. All right. Hey, you know, just remember Teddy Roosevelt, how he would deal with these problems.
Right.
All right. Okay. Good. Okay. Well, anyway, hey, very best to you and your listeners, Steve, and we'll talk, okay?
All right.
Maybe next week, hopefully, okay?
All right. Have a good night out there, Greg.
Okay. You too, dude. Thanks so much, Steve. Bye-bye.
Okay, everyone. I'm going to end this here a little bit early. I will probably put something on the radio stream, but I'm going to end my video stream a little bit early, so both my guests are gone here. Don't really have any other material. I hadn't planned on any other thing. So, I will see everyone, talk to everyone soon. Thanks for stopping out. I'm Stephen Roberts. This has been Cancel a Cabal. Good night, everyone.